Okay, it's 11:10. Let's get started. Are there any questions? Go on, don't be shy. Yes. Sorry, speak up. Where are the online lecture videos for this year? Good question. I have asked after them. They've said they will be available soon, but they've not been made available to us yet. I will chase it up again. Yes?
Can you do complex numbers with Haskell?
Not complex numbers, just complex math. Can you do complex maths with Haskell?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. That's some of the stuff that we've seen, I think people would think is complex.
But you said you can define the infinity. If somebody wants to put infinity as a number, that would be really hard to define.
Oh, is it hard to define infinity as a number? It's actually built into the hardware for floating point numbers. As well as the numbers that you're used to, there are also the numbers plus infinity, minus infinity, and NaN, which stands for not a number. For instance, if you divide something by zero, the result is NaN, because dividing by zero isn't a number. And plus infinity and minus infinity are there exactly so you can do things like have identities for maximum and minimum. Yes? Can you use guards inside lists? Very good question. Remember I gave you the principle which says that anywhere you can use an expression, you can use another expression. If then else is an expression, so you can use it anywhere, guard is part of an equation, not itself an expression, so you can't use it anywhere. But if you wanted a guard in the middle of an expression, that probably means what you really wanted is if then else, or to define another function that you could use a guard with. Yes?
How do we define a guard inside a guard?
How do you define a guard inside a guard? You cannot. There's one guard for each equation. Did you mean how do you combine two Boolean expressions within a guard?
No, for example, like an if inside another if.
Ah, right. You can do an if inside another if, but you can't do a guard inside another guard. And that's actually good that you've made me want to point out something, right? Remember when we did guards, it looked like this, or even, where is it? There. Three different sets of conditions to evaluate, and for each one you knew exactly what you were doing. Remember with if then else, we could do it like that, or we could do it nested. And remember the nested one was actually harder to follow. So you can always flatten things out, right? If you wanted to do it nested, what that really meant, well, if this condition and this condition is true, do this. If the same condition again and some other condition is true, do that, and so on. So you can just repeat the conditions. And in fact, the compiler is smart enough to go, wait a minute, he's testing the same condition twice. I'll just do it once and save the answer. So does that answer your question? Okay. Right, let's get on then. I was jumping up and down yesterday and saying, be sure to do your work before the tutorial. I'm not going to insult your intelligence by doing it again. But I realized there was one other problem that I noticed many students were having that I didn't talk about yesterday. And it's a problem I've had myself. So I thought I should mention it briefly, which is simply, again, very obvious, leave enough time to do the work. Right? So if you're trying to do the problems very late Thursday morning, when you have a tutorial Thursday afternoon, you may not have time to get everything done. Whereas if you start on Tuesday and went to the lab, there'd be a demonstrator there who could help you out. So the earlier you can start on the tutorial problems, obviously the better. You're giving yourself more time to get things done. And then if things take a bit longer than you thought or a bit harder than you thought, you can recover from that. So as well as doing the work before the tutorial, leave yourself enough time to get the work done. That's called time management, and it's one of the most important skills you will learn in your life. I will admit to not being very good at it. Too often I do things at the last moment. But you don't do that. You should all, you're nice and young. You can learn better habits than me. So start as early as possible with getting the work done. Any questions about that? Okay. So last time we were talking about a pen, and I mentioned that it's more efficient to do things parenthesized this way than parenthesized this way. I'll just point out I've added some bits to the notes about how parenthesization affects efficiency. But I won't go through that today, because today you're going to see the coolest thing ever. Today you're going to see how to define addition. But to get there, we need to do some work. So let's get started. So you've seen how to do applying a function to every element of a list. I'll get to your question in a minute. You've seen how to do filtering elements out of a list, right? Checking, say, for all the odd elements in a list. And yesterday we saw how to append a list. Today, so you've seen so far recursion used in very standard patterns. And today we're going to show you three or four more patterns. And once you have these patterns under your belt, you'll have seen enough different kinds of recursion to have a good sense of how to tackle pretty much any problem that comes your way. Okay, so that's what we're doing today. And then we'll you'll have tutorials that help you, again, define many different sorts of functions, get used to things. So there's a question over there. Oh, sure, thanks. And I think I have the mic on, but can people hear me in the back? Yeah, good. Okay, so the first is just a simple thing involving counting, right? You remember if you type in Haskell 1 dot dot 3, it gives you the list of numbers from 1 to 3. Or if you type 1 to 1,000, it'll give you a list of 1,000 numbers. Again, right, that's just a special notation for a function application. Pretty much everything can be done with function application. And the function has the wonderful name enum from 2. So enum from 2 of 1 to 3 is, again, the list from 1 to 3. And in general, if you write two expressions with dot dot between them and brackets around them, that's just enum from 2 applied to those two expressions. So how do you define enum from 2? So it's given m and n. Well, there are two cases, right? Either m is greater than n or it isn't. If m is greater than n, right, if we want to count up, say, from 10 to 9, how many numbers are there counting up from 10 to 9? None. So if m is greater than n, we have the empty list. But if m is less than or equal to n, then clearly m is going to be the head of this list. And to get the tail, we count up from m plus 1 to n. So I think we've got an example. Yep. So to count up from 1 to 3, right, second equation applies. M is going to be 1. N is going to be 3. So we've got 1 const on to enum from 2, m is 1, 1 plus 1 to n. So we've got 1 const on to enum from 2 of 2, because that's 1 plus 1 to 3. Then we go through again. This time m is going to be 2, n is still going to be 3. Again, it's the second equation. So we have a 2 in the front, and then we do enum from 2 of 3 up to 3. And notice that from 3 up to 3, you think, ah, I might stop. But let's look and see what it says. Is 3 greater than 3? No. Is 3 less than or equal to 3? Yes. So we do 3 const on to enum from 2 of 3 plus 1 up to 3. So now we've got enum from 2 of 4 to 3. Is 4 greater than 3? Yes. So now we get the empty list. So in this way, we get 1, 2, 3, and the empty list. So we're counting from the first up to the second inclusive. Right? If we just change this around, so this is greater than or equal to, and this is less than we would count up to but not including the last number, instead of up to and including the last number. So again, working out what the base case is very important. Don't forget the base case. Any questions about how this works? Is that clear enough? Sort of go like this so I know it's safe to go on. Okay, good. Yes?
Can you give the inverse from 3 to 1?
What would you do if you want to do the inverse and count down? Very good question. What do you think you would do? Right, so if we're counting down instead of up, these two tests would be reversed. And we'd need to change one thing here. Right, instead of plus 1, it would be minus 1.
And m should be greater
than. Right, and we change the tests around. Okay. Now that you know how to count, right, you could do various things more efficiently if you wanted to. So remember the factorial. Factorial is defined as the product of the numbers from 1 to n. It's like factorial of 4 is 1 times 2 times 3 times 4, which is 24. Writing it this way is perfectly fine. But let's say we want to write it as a recursion without using an intermediate list. Then typically what you would do is you define it as fact of a two-argument function. Okay, and the first argument, m, is going to count up, just like before. And the second argument, n, will stay the same every time. And it's the same thing. If m is greater than n, we're done. So we return the product of the empty list, which is 1. Why isn't it 0? Because 1 is the identity for multiplication. And then in the other case, we just take m and multiply it by the factorial 1 greater. So you see the pattern for this is very similar to the pattern for up to, which makes sense because, of course, oops, this is up to right here, enum from 2. And then here's an example, and I won't go through this in detail. You can check it in the notes. Of course, notice that if we did have a 0 here instead of 1, we would get, sorry, if we had a 0 here, instead of 1, then this last thing here, right, when we take factorial of 4 and 3, we would get 0 instead of 1, and the product of 1 and 2 and 3, and 0 would be 0. So if we did use 0 instead of 1, we'd get in trouble. Okay, now, when I first introduced recursion, people started to say things like, well, what if you wanted to find element n in a list? And now we know enough to start doing that sort of thing. And the key to doing all this is going to be one more function called zip. So it's called zip because it takes, did I have an example first? No. So let me explain what zip does first. Right? The type of zip is it takes a list of elements of type A and a list of elements of type B, and it returns a list of AB pairs. So if you give it a list of numbers, and a list of characters, because that's what a string is, it returns a list of number character pairs. So if I give it 0, 1, 2, and A, B, C, 0 pairs with A, 1 pairs with B, and 2 pairs with C. So this is very easy and straightforward using the techniques you've seen, except for one thing. We now do our recursion not on one list, looking at its head and tail, but on two lists, looking at the head and tail of each of them. So the key equation here is that the zip of x cons x's and y cons y's, okay, remember we want to pair consecutive elements, so clearly x pairs with y, and then for the tail, we pair the remainder x's with the remainder y's. Okay, we'll take a vote. How many people want to see this done slowly with stupid voice? Hands up. A few. How many people want to see this done a little bit less slowly with a little bit less stupid voice? Okay. The more people want less stupid. How many people didn't vote either time? Right. Do you want to express an opinion? Slow and stupid? No. Fast? Fast. Okay. So, Right, we've got the list 0, 1, 2, and the list A, B, C, and first we take off the heads of each, so 0 will be X, and A will be Y, and we get the pair 0, A, and then the tail of this is the list 1, 2, and the tail of this is the list B, C, so X is 1, 2, and Y is B, C, and we just pair them up. Then we do it again. So now 1 pairs with B, and now the tails are 2 and C, so we do it again, 2 pairs with C, and the tails are now both empty. And notice we've got two equations here. We say, if either one is empty, just return empty. I'll say more about that in a minute. So either of those equations match this. They both give the same answer. So this becomes empty. And this, of course, is just shorthand for this. So it's fairly straightforward. Everybody see how that works? So now you've got two different ways to combine two lists, right? You can append them, or you can zip them together. And they're very different, right? Append is all of the things in the first followed by all the things in the second. It's sort of a kind of sequencing, where zip is more in parallel. It's all of the things in the first side by side with all of the things in the second. Right, and as I mentioned, for zip, we've said if either list is empty, we'll return the empty list. You'll see a use of that in a minute. We could have done what I call a harsh definition, a more strict definition, one that's defined less often, and said, look, the two lists must be the same length. So if they're both empty, it's empty. And if they both have a head and a tail, pair the heads and repeatedly do it with the tail. And now, if the tails were not the same length, eventually one would reach zero and the other wouldn't. One would become empty and the other one wouldn't, and no equation would apply and we'd get an error. So they're slightly different, right? If you give them both lists of the same length, they're the same. But zip, if you give it two lists of different lengths, it pairs up all the elements as long as there are elements. So it stops when it reaches the end of the shorter list and just throws away the rest without saying anything, silently. But if you were using the other form of zip, it would give you an error if the two lists are of different lengths. Now, the reason for doing this is in Haskell, we can actually form an infinite list as long as we don't try to look at all of its elements. So if you say zip 0 dot dot, which is just like enum from 2, except it doesn't have a limit. It just keeps counting up. Then you will pair a number with each element in a list. And this is a very convenient way to find all the elements in a list. So this, of course, has infinite length. This has a finite length. It picks the shorter, so its length will be the length of the finite list. Another use where they're of different lengths is, let's say X is a non-empty list, and we take its tail and pair that with the original list. So then applying pairs to words, what that means is we're zipping words together with erds. So W gets paired with, right, if we zip words with erds, W gets paired with O, O gets paired with R, R gets paired with D, and D gets paired with S. In other words, it pairs every letter with the letter that follows it in the list. So they're quite useful things that you can do with zip. So here's an example of how all this works. What happens if you try to zip 0 dot dot with ABC? This stands for the infinite list of everything above 0. Fortunately, in Haskell, the computer is, we have a technical word for this, beautiful technical word. It was invented by somebody who I worked with in my first summer job, Jim Morris. He called it lazy evaluation. Right? So you can now write home to your mom and dad and said, hi, mom and dad, at school I learned today, my teacher taught me all about how to be lazy. And they'll be really pleased, I bet. So lazy is a technical word in computing. The actual title of my doctoral thesis is Listlessness is Better Than Laziness. And those were both technical words. Listless meant no intermediate lists. Laziness meant this. So notice that we don't compute something that we don't need to. And in this way, we can deal with an infinite list. So we're zipping 0 dot dot with the list A, B, C. We just do the same thing as before, right? 0 dot dot is going to be 0 cons on to 1 dot dot. It's a list whose head is 0 and whose tail is the list 1 and everything above. So when we match things up, x matches 0, x's matches 1 dot dot. And then we just go and do things again. 0 will pair with A. 1 dot dot will pair with BC. Again, what's the head of this list? X is 1. What's the tail? X is 2 dot dot. Everything above 2. What's the head of this? B. What's the tail of the list C? So now we have 1 paired with B, and we zip 2 dot dot with C. Again, 2 pairs with C. What's left? 3 dot dot paired with the empty string. Okay, which equation applies here? 3 dot dot is the same as 3 cons on to 4 dot dot. So it's non-empty, so this equation doesn't apply. But x's could be 3 dot dot, and then the empty list is the same as the empty string. So that matches. So now this equation applies. We return the empty list, and we get the list 0 paired with A, 1 paired with B, 2 paired with C. It never needed to know what 3 dot dot was. It threw away that whole infinite list. The place that happens is this line here, right? X's is 3 dot dot. We matched it on the left, but on the right, there is no X's. We've thrown it away. In this case, what we threw away was an infinite amount of stuff. And that's why I can work out what the answer is. Yes? So what happens if you pair two infinite lists? If you tried to print them out, it would print out the first pairs, and it would just keep going. And eventually, you would get tired, and you'd hit stop, and it would stop. This is what happens if you try to print out a single infinite list as well. On the other hand, if you zip that with another list that was finite, eventually it would give you the answer. Good question. Yes? What happens if you do zip empty list and empty list? Don't you need a case for zip? No. If both lists are empty, either of these two equations will apply. That's why we don't need a fourth equation. Okay, very good questions. So now we can do serious things, like write the function search. So search, given a list and an element, returns all the indexes of where that element appears in the list. So search of bookshop and O, okay, it appears 3 places in the list. As good computer scientists, always start counting from 0. A good computer scientist counts from 0, not from 1. So we're going to start counting from 0. So this will be position 0. This is position 1, this is position 2, this is position 3, position 4, position 5, position 6 is an O, and position 7. So it was positions 1, 2, and 6 that had O's, so we want to return 1, 2, 6. So this is really easy to define using comprehensions and zip. What we're going to do is we're going to return all I's for the pair ix drawn from zip 0 dot dot with x's, as long as x is the same as y. All right, so we're going to look at each position in the list. I is going to be the index of that position. X is going to be the character in that position. And then if x is the same as y, we return the index. Yeah, here's an example. Let's go through that before looking at the recursive definition. So bookshop was a little bit too long, so let's search book for O. right? So stupid computer just says, all right, X is his book, Y is O, copy this out with X is replaced by book and Y replaced by O. So now we're going to return all I X drawn from zip, zero dot dot with book, where X is equal to O. Okay. So what is this zip? Well, it's 0 paired with B, 1 paired with O, 2 paired with O, 3 paired with K. Okay. And then by definition of comprehension, that means we copy the whole rest of the comprehension. Right? So for index, for IX, for 0B, it's 0 such that B is equal to O. For 1O, it's 1 such that O is equal to O. For 2O, it's 2 such that O is equal to O. And for 3K, it's 3 such that K is equal to O. Well, this is false. This is true. This is true. This is false. So we get the empty list, 1, 2, the empty list, and we pen them together, and we get 1, 2. Go like this, if you understood, and raise your hand and ask a question if you didn't. Yes?
Can you explain what type EQA is?
Oh, good question. Thank you. Yes, I glossed over that. What is this EQA here? Well, search actually works for a list of A and an A as long as we know how to check them for equality. So when Haskell gives you the most general definition it can, it says, hey, this works for a list of A and any A as long as I know how to check A for equality. And that's what that bit means. If you want to make a specific one, this could be string and this could be char, and that knows it knows how to test those, so you don't need the eek bit. You can ignore the eek bit by now, but I put it in here because if you ever type in a definition without a type and Haskell spits one out, that's the one it would give. We'll learn more about eek later. Good question. Thank you.
So does that mean you can search for a string within a string using search?
Ah, could you search for a string within a string using search? No, because this is a list of A, and this is an A. So if this was a list of strings, and you searched for a string in that list, yes. But these can't both be the same type. So you could try to write a function to search for a string within a string, but that would be different than this function. You'd have to do something a bit more clever. And by the end of this exercise, you'll have seen enough that you would know how to do that. You'll need to use take and drop, which we'll see next. Okay. Any other questions? You're doing really well with questions today. If you're sitting there going, I'm lost, turn to your neighbor and go, I'm lost. Are you lost? If they say, yeah, I'm lost too, you can ask a question together. So I'll give you a moment to do that. Oh, good. I saw two people turn next to each other and say, I'm following this. Are you following this? Yeah, I'm following this. So that was pleasant to see. Okay. So now there's the recursive definition as well. And yeah, this is just the same as before. So how's the recursive definition work? Well, it's counting, just like before. So we'll define another function, which I'll call search, which takes three arguments instead of two. The list we're searching in, the value we're searching for, and the index we're currently at, which will start at the beginning of the list, which is 0. So to search the empty list for some value y and index I, of course, we return the empty list. There are no occurrences of y in the empty list. To search the list with head x and tail x's for value y, when we're currently at position I in the list, then if x is equal to y, we found an occurrence, return I, and search the remainder of the list. But now we'll be one further along, so we increment I by 1. If X is not equal to Y, we don't return I, but we'll have to search the rest of the list, so we do that just as before. Okay. So if we're searching book and O, that becomes search of book and O and 0. And then we check, is B, which is the head of the list, the same as O? No. So we use this equation here, and we do search of OOK and O and 1. We've increased because we're now position one in this list. Then we check, is O equal to O? Yes. So we return one, and then we do search of OK and O. And this increases by one to two, because we're now position two in the list. And then the head of OK is O, which is the same as O. So we return two, and then we do a search, uh-oh. Typo, right? That shouldn't be OK. OK is not OK, it should be K. Right, we're at the tail of that. So K and O, and this goes up by one to three. K is not the same as O, so we don't add that on, and we take the tail again. The tail of K is the empty list. So now we're searching the empty list for O. We're at position four. It's empty, so we just return the empty list. So we found one and two. Okay. Any questions about that? So now we're up to select, take, and drop. So select is written as two exclamation marks, but don't get all that excited about it. And it just means pick out the character at position I in the list, counting from zero. So zero, one, two, three, the third thing in the list is D. Take takes the first three elements of a list. Sorry, take N takes the first N elements, so take three is the first three. So the first three of words would be work. And drop of N removes the first three elements of the list and leaves all the rest of it. So drop three of words is dzz. Are people clear on what select, take, and drop do? That should be pretty straightforward. Okay. So, as you'd expect, using a comprehension and a zip, we can do all three of these, right? To find the ith element in the list, zip 0 dot dot with x's. So jx is the pair of index j with value x. And if j is equal to I, if we've reached the position we want, return x. Now this is going to give us a list of things, right? But we're counting up, and we want to find, you know, the one thing at this position in the list. So this list would, in fact, have at length at most 1. And we say the list of x is x. So that's a common definition to make. Notice that if we give it a list of length 5, and we say find the 10th element, this list will be empty. And the is only defined for a list of length 1. So it will give us an error if we try to find the 10th element in a list of length 5, which is what you'd expect. So take is very similar. We pair up indexes with elements, and then we return all the elements such that the index is less than I. And for drop, it's just the same, but we return all the elements such that the index is greater than or equal to I. So here's an example of take. Right, to do take three of words, we're going to find all x for jx pairs drawn from zip of 0 dot dot with words, such that j is less than 3. So here, I is 3, x is words, and we just copy this out. We get this. Zip of 0 dot dot with words is, of course, 0 paired with w, 1 paired with o, 2 paired with r, 3 paired with d, 4 paired with s, such that j is less than 3. So we'll return all x's from the jx pairs drawn from this list such that j is less than 3. So that means we'll return, right, the first time of these, x is w, j is 0, so we return w such that 0 is less than 3. The next time j is 1, x is o, so we return o such that 1 is less than 3, and similarly r such that 2 is less than 3, d such that 3 is less than 3, and so on. The first three of these are true, so we get W, O, and R. But 3 less than 3 is not true. So we don't return D, and 4 less than 3 is also not true. So these two become the empty list, and we just get W, O, and R appended together, which gives us were. Question?
How did the select function know it was infix? I noticed the double exclamations.
Oh, right, I wrote it infix. It's because it's not written with letters. Anything written with symbols is infix. Good question. Yes.
The division of select, where we have the division that J must equal I, if we omit this and just write I in the...
Oh, very good question. What would happen if you wrote VX, IX drawn from zip of zero dot dot with X's, and then just omitted the thing? So then it should only match if J is equal to I. There are programming languages where you can do that, but Haskell isn't one of them. When there's a test, we indicate it explicitly by writing it in the list. Very good. Everybody else happy with this? So now, I'm going to show you the recursive definition, but this time to recurse, we're not going to do it by counting up, we're going to do it by counting down. And it turns out the convenient way to count down so the reason we're counting down, say I want the nth element in the list, the easiest thing is to just count down as I go, right? So if I want the third element, I could do it by counting up, but we're going to do it by counting down. And it turns out that that makes numbers look a lot like lists. So I want to show you this parallelism. Remember, for lists, we had a recursive definition. A list is either null, or it's constructed, which we wrote x cons x's, where the head is x, an element, and the tail is x's, which is itself a list. So we defined a list as something whose tail is itself a list. It was getting, so we've defined list in terms of itself, but that kind of recursive definition works. You can define the counting numbers in the same way. By the way, I've had one picture so far of this strange beast, the list. Has anybody else done one yet? Because I want to remind you that I'm really interested in good pictures of creatures that have a head and a tail, where the tail is, again, the same kind of creature. Well, actually, numbers are almost the same, right? A natural number is either zero or it's the successor of a natural number, which we write n plus 1, so where its predecessor is n, a natural number. So see, this is just like a list where you don't care about the elements in the list, right? This makes sense. We can equate natural numbers, a natural number n, with a list whose length is n. We don't really care what's in the list. That's really what this definition is doing. So 0 is like the empty list, and n plus 1 is like a constructed list. So every number, right, can be written in the form 0 followed by plus 1 that number of times. So 3 is 0 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1. You really don't want to have to write out the number a million this way, right? It would take you quite a while. This is called base 1 notation, right? Normally we use base 2, which is much easier. Is that simple way of defining numbers clear to everybody? Right. Notice that the base case is absolutely essential. Otherwise, we couldn't have different numbers. We just keep counting plus 1 forever. So the 0 is absolutely essential to this. Okay, so let's see how this works. Let's look specifically at take. So, let's look at select first. So to select the 0th element from a list whose head is x and whose tail is x's, well, the 0th one's right at the head, so we just return x. Otherwise, we'll have a number of the form I plus 1, and to select the I plus 1th element of the list x cons x's, throw away x and find the ith element in the tail x's, right? So to find the third element in the list ABC, in the list words, I would then find the second element in the list ords, or the first element in the list urdis, or the 0th element in the list dis, which would be D, which is what we wanted. I saw a hand up.
Yeah,
And then take is very similar. To take zero things from a list, it's of course the empty list. To take I things from a list, from the empty list, well, we need to decide what that means. We could say that's undefined, but in fact, again, we're being lenient and we've defined that and we've said to take I things from the empty list, return the empty list. And finally, to take I plus one things from a list whose head is X and whose tail is X's, return X, that'll be the first thing, and then take I things from the list X's. So let's look at an example of that. To take three things from words, well, I is going to be 2, 2 plus 1 matches 3, X is going to be W, X's is going to be ORDS, so X is W, and we cons onto that, whoops, take of I with X's, so that's take of 2 with ORDS. So each of, this went down by 1, this got 1 shorter. And the same thing again, O at the front, 2 becomes 1, ORDS becomes RDS. And again, we get an R, and then we take 0 from, ooh, another typo. DDES. Has somebody been noting these typos? If somebody could note them down and send me an email afterwards saying, Phil, there were 2 typos. You had OK, where you should have had K, and you had RDS, where you should have had DS. Who's going to write that down and email that to me? You will. Thank you. So this should be DS, take 0 from DS, and then this equation applies, so that becomes the empty list and we get WOR. Do people see how that works? And I want to explain one thing about pattern matching. You remember back when I said, well, you could write squares this way, or if you really didn't want to use pattern matching, you could just use an if-then-else. And then this bit is like saying let X be the head of the list and X's be the tail of the list. So this way of writing squares and this are exactly equivalent. Yes?
For the select function, what happens if you give it an I that is bigger than the length of the list?
For select, what happens if you give it an I that's longer than the list? It's not defined. If you work through the definition, you will see it returns an error. It tries to take the of the empty list.
Could we see the select function again?
Could we see the select function again? Yes. All right. Let's just do it. Right. There it is. So this way, again, if you gave it an empty list, it's not even defined for the empty list. So it'll work its way down to the empty list, trying to find the nth element in the empty list, and it'll give an error. I mean, here, I said its type was it takes an integer and a list and returns an element. That's, of course, wrong. It should be a list and an integer and return the element. Third typo. The type of select was wrong. Thank you. You're paying attention more than I was when I wrote the slide. Okay. So you remember this bit with square and squares. It's just the same with take. Right, if you've got a pattern against, these are called I plus 1 or N plus 1 patterns sometimes. What this means, notice that this will never match 0. Right? You could say, this is supposed to match 0 with I being minus 1, but it doesn't. The rule for this kind of pattern, if you said number plus 1, is you're matching a natural number, so this can never be less than 0. So if you try to match minus 3 against this, it'll just give you an error. So this is the same as saying, well, take J of W's is if J is 0 or if W's, this is our list, is null, then return the empty list. Otherwise, let X be the head of W's, X's be the tail of W's, and I here, right, we're letting J be the integer now, I will be 1 less than that. Let I be j minus 1. This will only happen if j wasn't 0. In fact, this will only happen, I should have put an extra condition in here, this will only happen if j is greater than 0. And that does x cons take I of x's. So I here and here is one less than this j. So this is just to show that anytime you've got patterns, you can always expand it out in terms of conditionals and bindings if you want to. And also very commonly, it's very common to find a program where instead of writing I plus 1 here, somebody's just written j where j is greater than 0. And then instead of writing I there, they write j minus 1 there. So these two ways of doing things are equivalent. Any questions about that? Okay, so now I'm going to show you something that when I first saw it, it blew me away. I think this is the thing that made me want to be a computer scientist. I actually remember reading about it in the Encyclopedia Britannica when I was in high school, and when I saw it, I went, wow, that is so cool. Okay, so are you ready for this? Arithmetic. We just saw how to define every possible number in this very simple way of counting, saying a number is either 0 or it's 1 greater than some other number. Right? That's the recursive definition of numbers. And just using that definition, you could define anything about numbers that you'd ever want to define. For instance, it's very easy to define arithmetic, addition, multiplication, or exponentiation. What does it mean to define addition? Well, every number will either be 0 or 1 greater than some number. So m plus 0 will be m plus n plus 1, well, recursively add m to n, that's a smaller problem because n will be smaller, and then add 1 to the result. If you think about it, this looks a lot like the definition of append. And it works very similarly. Times, m times 0 is always 0. M times n plus 1, well, multiply m by n, and then add m to the result. Which plus is this the one we just defined? So having defined plus, it's easy to define times. Times is just repeated addition. And then similarly, exponentiation is repeated multiplication. So a number raised to the 0th power is 1. A number raised to the n plus 1 power is m raised to the n power and multiply it by m. Very similar pattern each time. You can actually continue that pattern and in that way come up with functions that generate very large numbers. That's actually an important, the function that continues this n times is very important in number theory. It's called Ackermann's function. Yes? What about the arithmetic for floating point numbers? That's a bit more complicated. But as you'll see, once you can define addition and multiplication, you could do anything else in terms of them. So the way you do floating point numbers is by saying, well, a floating point number, well, for instance, for rationals, it's very easy, right? A rational is the result of dividing one natural number by another, and so on. Oh, and then you need to do integers as well, because these are just the natural numbers, so you need the negative numbers as well. But we'll learn later how you define other data types, and these are all fairly straightforward in terms of this. But the key idea is just using recursion, we can get naturals, and then from there we can get everywhere else. I think it was Dedekind that said, God created the naturals, man created all the other numbers, saying that the naturals were sort of special. So we've got the naturals. You can do what God can do. You can create the naturals. I once read a science fiction story by Greg Egan, who's a very good science fiction writer. And in fact, he's also a trained computer scientist, a programmer. And he wrote a story where arithmetic works differently in some parts of the universe. And these people built a giant computer, and they were doing arithmetic on really big numbers, and they found this other bit of the universe where arithmetic worked differently. And by it working differently, there were creatures that could create new numbers by what was sort of weird. Okay. But the basis for the story was that arithmetic could work differently somewhere. And if you just think of arithmetic as what you learned in school, all these rules for working down, writing down numbers, it's really easy to sort of believe if the numbers were big enough, it might behave differently. Because that's what happened to you, right, when you're trying to write it down when the